This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. As college students explore their campuses this autumn, they're likely to find a wide array of student groups that involve race and ethnicity. The Black Student Union, Asian American groups, Hispanic and Latino groups. Universities, including top-tier schools, say they are spending money on trying to increase the number of minority students, especially since the 2006 Supreme Court ban on affirmative action. But is there too much focus on racial diversity and not enough on economic diversity? Ron Haskins is a senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institution, and he co-directs the Center on Children and Families. Welcome, Ron.
Good to be here.
So what do you think, Ron? Should the challenge for America's colleges be less about addressing the racial diversity problem and more about addressing problems with economic diversity?
Yes. And keep in mind that if you address problems with income differences, you are addressing racial differences because, on average, blacks in the U.S. have less income than whites. So the group that you would be focused on would be disproportionately black. And it's less controversial. It's probably legal. It's an American tradition that we focus on low-income families and try to give them, you know, more benefits. And we should be even more committed to doing it in education, because if people get a good education, they can escape poverty and they would be upwardly mobile. So if we could successfully prepare low-income kids for college and help them get through college, including two-year colleges, it would make a huge impact on inequality and on economic mobility in the United States.
So looking at the Black Student Union or the Asian American Students Group, that's all well and good, but there really is a need to go deeper.
I applaud and strongly encourage community groups that try to help low-income students from their ethnic group or country background or whatever it is. That's a great thing. That's private, and they ought to do it. And Godspeed if they could be successful, because Lord knows public policy is not being very successful. But if we're talking about public policy, then we should focus on low-income students of whatever race, color, ethnic group, and so forth, and do everything we can think of to help them prepare for college. There are many differences between low-income families and middle-class families that bear on the chances that a low-income kid will go to college.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing is academic preparation in high school. If you look at the bottom 20%, in other words, maybe 25,000 or so in income, only 34% of them enroll in school, and only 11% graduate. So their two-thirds drop out of school before they graduate. By contrast, in the top quintile, 79% enroll in school and 53% graduate, and that perpetuates the economic conditions that was present in the parents' generation. So this is a nut we have to crack if we're serious about equal opportunity in the United States.
And yet we hear from school districts and school administrators that have had to cut and had to retrench, and so there's a lot of work to be done there.
Yes. I would point out that we spend more on our education system than any other nation in the world. It's kind of like our health system, and we don't get very good results. And we get very good results with kids from middle-class families. But where we really fall down is kids from low-income and minority families. One reason is they go to lousy schools. You look at inner cities, and minorities disproportionately live in inner cities, and they go to some of the worst schools in the country. So it's not a great surprise that they're not well prepared for college. And that's especially the case because, and here this is very controversial, so I want to say it as carefully as I can.
Mm-hmm.
Their parents do not have college experience. Their parents usually do not have a high education beyond high school, many of themselves high school dropouts. And there are many studies that show that for the kind of home environment that's necessary to prepare kids for college, so an emphasis on academics, making sure the household is quiet, checking the kids' homework, all the kind of things that many middle-class parents do to try to boost the achievement and the performance of their children, many low-income kids do not get. So if you have problems in the home that are not conducive to academic preparation for college, and you have lower college admission rate, and you have lousy high schools and junior high schools, what outcome would you predict?
I'm speaking with Ron Haskins, who is with the Brookings Institution. He co-directs the Center on Children and Families and the Budgeting for National Priorities Project. Ron, let's look at the universities and the colleges of America. We have heard, especially elite colleges, promising to admit low-income students, but most top-tier colleges haven't really upped their percentage of poor students in a generation. Why do you think that is?
If they maintain admission standards, that will be the inevitable result. So if the universities are going to do something about it, I think they're going to have more coordination with the public schools. They're going to have to encourage the public schools to do a better job. And they're going to have to encourage more kids to be in, hopefully, more successful programs that are apart from the public schools but often operate in the public schools, that try to give kids experiences during either junior high or senior high or both that help prepare them for college. So mentoring, counseling, help of finding a good college, help with financial preparation and all that. If the universities continue to get kids who are not prepared for college, they're just going to fail out as they do now. And here's another thing that's really important. A lot of these kids borrow money to go to college because another disadvantage they have is their parents don't have much money. So they borrow money to go to college. They fail or they drop out of college. Now they don't get the benefit, and yet they're stuck with a debt. Universities have billions and billions of dollars, especially the elite schools, in scholarship money. There's no controversy about a highly qualified kid from a low-income family. But what about a kid with modest qualifications that in any fair competition would not normally be admitted to the university? So can the university change its standards a little bit to admit low-income people? I think that that is more constitutionally permissible than considering race in admission. That's certainly what the Supreme Court has said.
We spend time kind of looking at figures that talk about the elite, the Georgetowns, the Michigans, the Vassars. It sounds like what you're saying is we need to consider getting them into college, period, right? As opposed to whether they get into an elite college, whether, as you say, it's a two-year program,
right.
Get them in.
Yeah, we should be cautious about this. If a kid is admitted to a school that's above his capability, he or she is going to have a rough time. But similarly, if there are kids that are from low-income families and inner-city schools and so forth who are highly qualified and they go to a lousy school, they're likely to drop out of a lousy school. They need to be challenged. They need to be in a university that's matched to their abilities. And so here's another thing that we could do. If we had good counselors in the high schools preparing the kids for college in the sense of knowing how to look for the right college, trying to find a match between the kids' test scores and their performance on the report card in school and how selective the college is, those are very, very important things that universities, this is another example of something universities could do to help, to encourage the public schools to provide that kind of service. And we do know that schools that disproportionately serve low-income kids are less likely to have counselors, and the counselors they have are probably less qualified as well.
There's a lot of what-ifs in all of this, isn't there?
Oh, yes, a lot. Almost everything I've said has been somewhat discouraging, I guess.
I know. Where's the light?
Yeah. Well, I think there is light. I think we're doing better. First of all, I think that many universities are really committed to this issue. They want to do something. They're trying to do things. For example, one study at community college in New York, and the kids took their courses together, three courses, including a course that tried to prepare them for college work, and they stayed together for 2 years. Oh, and the teachers, the professors stayed, tried to communicate with each other. They tried to build a kind of esprit de corps among these classes of kids who took their coursework together. And it had impacts on how many courses they completed. It had impacts on how well they did in their courses.
It almost sounds like the idea of maybe having a grade 13 and 14 when you talk about that esprit de corps and kind of making them feel maybe more in their comfort zone.
Yes, I think part of this is undoubtedly psychological as opposed to, you know, just straight academic preparation. The kids can help each other. The kids can tutor each other. They can, if one of their values is to do well in school and stay in school and get their degree, that's the kind of mechanism that could have an impact. But in any case, it did have impact. And if we can build from that, there is some hope. By contrast, one of the initial strategies for kids that came to college unprepared, who are disproportionately low income and minority, was to give them remedial courses in English and in math, especially English. And they did not work. They pretty much have been a failure around the country. Again,
why is that?
Because once a kid gets to be 18 and they haven't done well in school and they don't have the basics, it takes a lot to teach that to them. It's more than just one course of, you know, an hour a day or 3 hours a week or whatever it is. It takes a tremendous commitment to try to learn the basics that then has an impact on their performance in all their other courses. I'm increasingly inclined over the, say, 5 years that I've been looking into this to believe that if the kids are not prepared by the time they graduate from high school, it's a rough course ahead.
Ron Haskins is a senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institution. Ron, it has been a pleasure to talk with you, and I hope we do it again soon.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.